Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting today live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Seattle, and I hope it's a beautiful day where you are, too, anywhere around the world. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this world a much better place. I want to thank everyone so much for making Out of This World Radio one of the most popular talk shows in the Seattle area. And we now have over 250,000 listeners in over 90 countries. And I just want to thank everyone so much for their beautiful support. I had planned today to have James Redfield on my show for the first hour from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. He's the author of The Celestine Prophecy, and I was really looking forward to having him on the show, but there was a scheduling conflict with James, and he cannot be on the show today because he's actually flying into Portland, Oregon, as we speak now, and he's on a plane flying to Portland. Well, he'll be giving a presentation tomorrow. I'll be going to his presentation then, and then I plan to interview him then for another show. So he'll be on my show in the future, and I'm so sorry that he can't come on today. In place of James, I have another interview I recently did in Iceland with a famous psychic who contacts elves and the people of the Hollow Earth in Iceland. Her name is Gudrun Bergman, and she's written some wonderful books on the magical and mystical heritage of Iceland. I'll be going back to Iceland in June of next year with Gudrun to visit the elves and the people of the Hollow Earth there. And if you'd like to come along with me, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Or you can call me at area code 509-750-9793 here in the United States. And I promise that if you come to Iceland, it'll be really an out-of-this-world trip. Iceland is one of the world's most beautiful countries, and it's easy to get to whether you're flying in from North America or Europe or anywhere else in the world. During the second hour, from 3 to 3:15, I'll be celebrating Dr. Masaru Emoto's birthday, which was on July 22nd. When Dr. Emoto passed away in October 2014, he was considered one of the world's most spiritual people, and I'll be honoring his life and work with Michiko Hayashi, who's the director of the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, Japan. She'll be coming to us live from Japan for this interview. The interview, her interview, will be followed by an interview with Conrad Halbig of Koha Publishing in Munich, Germany, who will be joined by both myself and Michiko, and we'll be talking about the incredible new beautiful film that Conrad has just released, also to celebrate the life and work of Dr. Emoto and his incredible work on the message from water and how we can make this world a better place. So I hope you'll be able to listen to that. Before we start, I'd like to thank everyone so much for their support for this radio program, because Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. I really appreciate your help and support, because I know together we can create a much better and happier world. With that, I'd like to thank Corey and Saul and Kirkland for their beautiful support, and especially for their generous contribution recently for a new library for the Hopi Indians in Arizona. It's amazing, really, to think this, but there's about 20 or 25,000 people on the Hopi Reservation in Arizona, and they don't have a library. Isn't that amazing? In addition to not having clean water, well, they do have clean water, because I was able to raise $30,000 for clean water filters for the Hopi. They don't have a library, so I'm raising funds now for a library. And if you'd like to donate to the library, either funds, books, or computer equipment, please email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I'd also like to thank my wonderful friends, Mary and Elias in Costa Rica, of course, Bradley and Gemma, and their cat, Jasper, in London, England, Jan Erik and Emma Louise in Norway, and everyone around the world who've helped me raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. We're also looking for additional sponsors and advertisers for the show. Any advertising on the program will have a worldwide audience for your goods and services in over 90 countries. With that, I'd like to thank my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website and providing wonderful support, my friends in the Galactic Alliance, who have been supporting my show, my angelic and earthly family, and of course KKNW, without whose help and support this program would not be possible. I have a spiritual mentoring program where I also teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. And if you'd like to get in touch with your loved ones who've passed on, or contact your angelic guides and get some good spiritual advice, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793, or toll-free on my toll-free number in the United States and Canada at 1-888-879-8339. I have some wonderful spiritual events coming up that I wanted to tell everyone about. This summer, I'll be going, or this September, I'll be going back to Mount Shasta again from September 5th to the 11th, which is one of the world's most spiritual places. We have some room left. The trip is filling up fast, though. So if you'd like to come, please let me know as soon as possible. The cost is only $200 per person, and it includes free camping. Mount Shasta is a very special and magical place where miracle healings occur from the Telosians and the beautiful people of Telos and the Hollow Earth. When we were there in July, just last month, earlier this month, we met a Palladian commander who beamed himself down to our campsite late one night, and we met him and had an amazing conversation with him. We also saw many Sasquatch, including a lot of Sasquatch who stole our food. And yes, they did want us to, apparently we hadn't left enough white frosted cinnamon rolls for them, and they got upset, so they started taking our other food. So that's, anyway. And also, we were also able to contact Adama, the high priest of Telos. And last September, Adama healed the vision in my eyes, restoring them to perfect 20/10 crystal clear eyesight. If you'd like to go, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Or you can call me in the United States at 509-750-9793. I wanted to thank everyone so much for their support of this program. And also, we have a surprise guest right now. His name is Q, and Q has come on to just give us a quick update. Q, what a nice surprise. Thank you for calling in.
Hello, Ted. How are you?
I'm fine. Fine. It's so good to talk to you, Q.
How was my reception?
Oh, it's excellent. It's excellent. It's just excellent. You had a quick update for us on a few things you wanted to tell us about?
Yes. I commend you again for all the work you're doing and all the people you have on, and you know, how brave you are to work with so many, and all the people you work with, and especially your bravery for working with me. Thank you, and unconditional love to you and all your listeners.
Well, thank you, Q. That's very kind of you to say that.
One of the reasons I'm doing this show is, you know, I really want everyone to believe and choose what they prefer every second of every day. At the same time, I want to help create redundancy through the messaging that's already published throughout the couple years, and provide hope and encouragement to possibly some justice we would desire. And one of the things that have happened, I don't think this is new news, that we understand that 9/11 was a very, very well orchestrated project. And I would encourage people to do their homework on helping us create more avenues for justice and forgiveness too. Mm-hmm. And one of the one things that will become blatantly and dramatically learned soon will be that 9/11, what we witnessed, was a very small portion of what was planned to occur. And I encourage everybody to do their own homework. But we've talked about this. I won't be long here, Ted, but we talked
That's
about
fine.
The formal and informal decision-making process in America. And I want us to start learning about how that works in our day-to-day lives. And so let's look at three states that, if you wanted to control America throughout the last 100 years, you'd have to have three or four of these industries. The banking industry, the refining industry, the entertainment industry, and let's throw some technology in there too. So you'd need California, Texas, and New York. So one of the things that's happening that I would encourage everyone to research is you're seeing some people step up to be brave and really help out on this process. And one of those peoples is Adam Schiff, a congressman out of California. Mm-hmm. And although this has been an attempt for a couple of years, they finally have approved the ability to broadcast Guantanamo Bay proceedings. So all of the 9/11 proceedings from Guantanamo Bay and other military bases, the House has approved that they will be televised. Now, I would encourage us all to start researching this, because in the mainstream media, we've been sold that maybe it's just a race of people who constructed this event. And I think what we will find is was. Maybe it was a very, very, very widespread labyrinth of individuals that may have alternative motives in all of the industries that I spoke of earlier. So I hope that helps and gives people hope. And I certainly don't want to be a downer on this. I want the most positive outcome for all of us, the people that have been directly and indirectly affected by this, with the utmost respect and appreciation for unconditional love for this planet. And thank you, Ted.
Thank you so much, Q, for sharing your words of wisdom. And I can't wait to talk to you again, my friend. Great. That was Q.
Cheers. Have a beautiful day.
Okay. Thank you. You too, Q. That was Q giving us a quick update on some things regarding 9/11. A few quick things before we go to this interview in Iceland. We are also planning a Cosmic Awareness Conference of Love and Light in Dresden, Germany for early November 2019. Dresden, of course, was horribly bombed at the end of World War II. They had firestorms there, and it's a place that needs healing, and it's also now becoming a spiritual center, a magnet for many people across Germany and across Europe. And if you'd like to come to the conference, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I'll have more details about the conference in my next show. Also, I'm continuing my efforts to raise clean water for both the Hopi and Navajo Indians, as well as a new library. The water on both the Hopi and Navajo Indian lands in Arizona have been contaminated by arsenic and carcinogenic radiation for over 70 years. But they're finally getting the clean water that they need, but they need additional help. With the help of the Seattle-based Clean Water Foundation, Leo McLaughlin and Martha Childress, clean water filters are now being provided to both the Hopi and Navajo Indians. For only $125, a new clean water filter can be purchased for either the Hopi or the Navajo so they can finally have clean water without arsenic or radiation. Here in Seattle, of course, we take for granted clean water, but among the Hopi and the Navajo in Arizona, they don't have clean water, and the water they drink is carcinogenic and full of radiation. And in the United States, I think it's unacceptable for these poor people to drink this contaminated water. If you'd like to donate toward this worthy effort, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com or call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793. In addition, I'll be coming out with a new spiritual book on contacting spirits and angels on the other side. I've been asked whether I, in the past, during this past couple of years, whether I'll be writing another book, and I will be. It's already started. It will be published in Germany, in both German and in English, and I'll be giving a series of seminars and presentations in Germany in late October and also in early November 2019. My other book, Messages from the Masters, is also being translated into German as we speak and should be available later this year. I'll also be available for readings in Munich, Dresden, and other cities in Germany. If you'd like to meet in Germany in late October, early November, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I also speak German, and I think it's clearly time for me to become much better in speaking and in reading German. I'd like to say vielen Dank, which means many thanks to Diana and Dennis and Saskia, Danielle, Sandy, as well, of course, Conrad and Ehrlich, and Dan and Ursula in Switzerland, and everyone else in Germany and Switzerland who's been supporting my work. I will give you more details as things develop, but I'm very excited. Finally, before we go to Iceland here, I was in Europe last month giving presentations, but in the Brussels airport, I lost my laptop computer. I was in a hurry to catch a plane, and I left my computer in the men's bathroom. Anyway, I got it back a couple days ago. It was found, but when I opened it up, something really weird happened because I opened it up. Nobody had opened up the computer since I lost it on June 24th. But in a file on the computer was the airway bill number for when my computer was sent back to me this week from Brussels, from DHL. So how did an airway bill number get on my computer that was sent to me earlier this week, and the file is dated June 24th? Obviously, the computer went into another dimension, but it's a true story. And with that, I'd like to bring on Gudrun Bergmas. She's a wonderful psychic. She lives in Reykjavik, Iceland. I'll be going back to Iceland and visiting elves and the people of the Hollow Earth in Reykjavik and throughout Iceland. But she's a fascinating lady. I don't know whether we can get the entire interview on, but we'll get on as much as we can. So if we could play that now, and I'll be coming back at the end of the hour. Hello, friends. I'm in Reykjavik, Iceland, with a wonderful lady named Gudrun Bergman. Did I pronounce that correctly? I hope
not
so.
Not quite, but it's okay. It's Gudrun.
Okay, good. I'm glad you said it right.
Okay, thank you.
And we're in Reykjavik, Iceland today, and she talks about seeing elves and all the beautiful stories about elves. How did you first get interested in this topic?
We could call it intuitive or psychic or whatever, when I was a child. Mm-hmm. And the way in which a being communicated with me was always through a voice. When I would go to bed at night, there was always somebody talking in my ear. But when I was about 12, I didn't want this to, you know, I felt it was so interfering with my life that I asked for it to stop. And so it wasn't until I was about probably 35 that I went to a year-long seminar with a very known psychic here in Iceland, and she kind of opened me up again. So, but elves and what we call hidden people, which is two different things, but we sometimes use the same word elves for them, is something that's part of our folklore, our history. So we believe that they moved here with the people who came to settle here originally. And if you read the Edda, which is about the pagan mythology, then they talk about giants and elves and dwarves. So dwarves are more like the smaller versions. And then you can have all kinds of devas around mountains and such. But the hidden people are basically, or what we call Hultefolk or Alvar, is that they're basically the same height we are, but they're on a totally different frequency. So I always think that Peter Jackson did a really good job in what's the name of the movie again? Lord of the Rings, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because he portrayed them at a very, like they were more translucent. And that's basically the way in which I see them. They're more translucent than we are. So they're not in this dense energy that we are. So when we, again, talk about dwarves, they're smaller beings. And then you can have what they call dark elves and white elves, or like elves and dark elves, and the dark elves could be the mean ones. So there's quite a distinction, and none of them are green like they're portrayed in the Christmas movies that you see today. But they certainly do, you know. And then we have those what we call really tiny ones that come and mess up your home. They come and sit on things that so you don't see them, you don't find them. And things like that. So that this is part of, like, our folklore as such.
That's just really amazing. It's fascinating. My friend Christian, who took us over here today, and thank you, Christian, for bringing us over, told us about a story where they were trying to construct a road, and they were trying to move several rocks. But every time they tried to move the rocks, the earth-moving equipment would break down.
Yeah.
Could you tell us about that story? It sounds like you know about it.
Yes, I know about it. This has happened in several areas of Iceland, that road construction has been obstructed by the what we would call the hidden people or elves, but in a sense of being similar to humans. And and roads have gone around rocks. And they have my cousin. She lives in one of those roads that there's a huge bend on the road, and that's in Kopavogur, which is in here the greater capital area. Mm-hmm. So it's not really outside in the country. But while I lived out in Snæfellsnes by the Snæfellsjökull glacier, one of our former neighbors from Reykjavik came to visit, and he was the chief engineer for the public road administration. And so we started telling him a story. We went for an evening walk, and there was a little a summer cottage close by, and there was a new owner, and he'd been reconstructing everything, and he wanted to plant a tree behind the house. And every time he took out a shovel, it would break.
And so he
finally ended up calling this psychic person, Ertla, that I studied with. Mm-hmm. And she came and checked out the area, and she said, well, there's no wonder. There's this big female entity that lives behind your house, and she doesn't want to be disturbed. So he stopped the process. So we're telling this story to our friend who's the engineer at the public road administration. And my late husband says, well, you know, you educated guys, you don't believe in anything like this. You're just, you know, you're just laughing at us. And then our friend goes and says, well, you know something, if you knew how many meetings I have conducted as a representative of the Public Road Administration with hidden people in Iceland, you'd be surprised. So there's usually a psychic that comes to the meetings and is an interpreter for the hidden people.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Now, are they in like a fifth dimension, fourth dimension?
I'd say fifth dimensional, although it's hard to say. It's just that the frequency is different, so they can be they're on the planet, but they're still in a different on a different frequency.
Were they here at the time of Atlantis? Do they ever give you much information about their history?
Well, no, not as such. Although by the glacier there is another mountain called Mount Stapafell, and one of our friends, David Carson, he's co-author of the Medicine Cards, mm-hmm. still lives in Taos. He came to Iceland, and we were all raving about the glacier, you know, being so magnificent and all that. And he said, well, to me, there's a lot more shamanic energy around this Mount Stapafell because there is a pyramid from Atlantean times in there.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, you know, this part of the country, the western part is old, as is the eastern part, but the center of the country is relatively new because it's been created through eruptions and such, mm-hmm. and this is also where the rift between the North American and the Eurasian plates mm-hmm. runs through. So, it could be that. So, yeah. we tried in meditation several times as a group who started building up the community in at Hellnar, in Snæfellsnes. We started meditating, you know, and in meditation trying to enter this pyramid that we found, but it took a long, long time before we were permitted to go in there, and. It's also a connection with other planets.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So you've been inside this pyramid in the astral plane.
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Fascinating. What is it populated? Are there?
I actually haven't asked questions who built it or where. It's just like. It's a civilization with a lot of crystals. It's a hierarchy. There's a well in there that an old, we could say, wise person protects. And
it's still inhabited.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah. It's people are still there. Yeah.
Fascinating. In the higher dimension.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's amazing because, you know. You're here. I had no idea you existed, so to speak, before Christian called. Yeah. And it's interesting how people are connected in different ways. Mm-hmm. And several years ago, somebody called me and said, can we meet you? We'd like to talk to you. So I went and had some coffee with him in a coffee shop in Reykjavik. Mm-hmm. And we decided to go on an experience, because there was a German and two American ladies. And the German was, practiced shamanism. And so he, in a Gaelic, I think it's Gaelic, because it's like in an Irish culture. I don't remember what he called it anymore. But we were working, on the inner planes. We would journey together while he lived in Germany and I lived in Iceland. So on one journey, we met by this little spring where the wise person was. And from there, we were taking a journey. And I was led to this glass ship that looked like a ship. Mm-hmm. And once I aboarded the ship, it changed. I didn't see anybody on it in the beginning. It changed into a spaceship, and I was taken to another planet.
Wow. Where did you go?
I'm not quite sure what the planet is called. I don't remember at the moment. But it was interesting because in order to be able to exit the ship, I had to almost change my body, so to speak.
Oh, wow.
Because it was like I had to take on a suit. Mm-hmm. To be able to, mm-hmm. to go onto the planet. So mm-hmm. there are connections there. There's been talk through the years that there is an interdimensional gateway by the glacier, mm-hmm. so that it's like a space where you can get lost and people around you can't see you, mm-hmm. and then you kind of resurface again. Always feeling you've been in the same spot. Mm-hmm. So it is, it's an interdimensional doorway. So it's, mm-hmm. it's pretty powerful.
Mm. Amazing. Are there other places like that here in Iceland?
There are several places similar to this one, but of course I lived out there for 15 years. So I explored this one the most. Mm-hmm. And once you're back in Reykjavik and even though I travel the country quite a lot, I would need more time to explore certain areas in order to be able to discover that. But I lived there like 15 years, and 15 years you can do a lot of meditation and inner work, and the winter times were interesting too. And also, like how people come to you for healing, like from other, because you need to heal the female energy, and how women that were not recognized in the past and were killed or something, that they needed, like, I know you needed to heal their journey and acknowledge, mm-hmm. that they were persons, so the energy stays, mm-hmm. there until some respect and honoring has taken place.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a lot of healing work like that in various parts. Yeah.
Did they give you messages about what humanity is doing to the planet now, or what lies in the future?
Well, I've been involved in environmental work since the late 1980s, and mm-hmm. I have to say that we will not wake up until there's a total catastrophe.
Too bad.
Yeah, it's just the more and more people are awakening to the fact, but we're being split in two. So there are those who are awakening and there are those who are not. And unfortunately, the message that I get is that it's going to be a catastrophe, but also that it's really important for all of us who are spiritually awakened to balance ourselves, prepare ourselves, mm-hmm. because we're going to need to be like supporters for everyone else, mm-hmm. when the catastrophe happens.
Hmm.
Whatever it be, it can be like back in the late 1780s or 1770s, I think 1780s, here in Iceland, we had a three-year volcanic eruption.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So about two-thirds of the population of Iceland either died from the results of the, from the ashes and diseases developed through that, or from hunger because all the livestock died, more or less.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So all kinds, all things can happen, but we need to stay so so focused and continue to kind of stabilize ourselves. And the, then there's the other thing that I received messages about, and that's the glaciers are melting. And the glaciers are like the magnetic points of the planet. So when they melt, there's going to be some tipping.
Pole shift?
Yeah, very okay. likely.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Or at least a magnetic pole shift.
Yeah, yeah, okay. definitely. And this has been happening gradually now because they keep on having to reset the landing gear at airports and stuff because there's a slight change. Yeah. But it's likely, you know, because when you look at it, in, by 2200, the biggest glacier in Iceland will have disappeared.
Oh, my goodness.
And it is now the biggest glacier in Europe.
Wow.
So we're watching it melt away. And the other problem we're going to be looking at is that all these glaciers are a source of water mm-hmm. to all of us. And that's also for hydroelectric energy, you know, for the power plants and such. So we're going to have to rethink and plan further into the future about how we can do things differently. So we're being pressed to do this. But I don't have any other words than the greed of people.
Yeah.
You know, that for more all the time.
That's not sustainable. Yeah, that's not sustainable.
In no way, ever.
What about, there's rivers here in Iceland.
Yeah.
Do you have salmon or fish that go up the rivers, and are they fed by the glaciers? And if the glaciers go away, does that mean the end of fish runs?
No, usually most of the fish runs into the, it does run into the glacial rivers too, but most of it runs into the freshwater rivers. Hmm. So the main fishing will be there. But even so, the stock of fish is being, I don't know if it's depleting or something, but to me, you know, I'm a former fisherman. So to me, it's either go catch the fish and catch it and honor it by eating it and such, or just leave it in the river. But the way in which people are now going to catch and do the catch and release mm-hmm. is that the fish will use all his adrenaline to fight for his life. And so by the time people have caught it, they touch the scales on the fish, they you know, destroy it in some way, and then they put the fish back in. He's half dead by the time they put him in, mm-hmm. and he's never going to have the energy for reproduction. So I think this is interfering.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, wow. So this is interfering with the cycle of life. So we keep on saying, oh, it's the seals, it's the whales, it's somebody else. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, the seals and the whales live in the ocean. Mm-hmm. We live on land. So, mm-hmm. of course, they need to eat what's there. We eat what's on land. We also eat what's in the ocean. Yeah. So it's kind of, we're battling for the, how should we say, control of the resources everywhere mm-hmm. in the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we, in general, people don't wake up until there's a catastrophe. Mm-hmm. We just kind of look at it everywhere.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What about mermaids, mermen? Are there stories of them existing around here in Iceland?
Not mermaids as such, but women who shapeshift into seals.
Oh, tell me more.
Yeah, but then I have to go back in time. Because the interesting thing is that you have these stories in Ireland mm-hmm. of women shapeshifting and turning into seals. Now, many of the Norsemen who came to settle in Iceland, they lived in that area. Like in the 900s, Dublin was a Viking town. Mm-hmm. And the Norsemen, they controlled part of Ireland, which then had many kingdoms, like most countries had small areas that were kingdoms. And many of them married the women or took them as slaves to Iceland and had children by them. So the stories are being told from generation to generation. Who tells the stories to her children? Mm. The mother. Mm. So we have the same about women who go out from the home and they shapeshift into seals and then they come back again. And the fisherman who catch the seal who turns into a woman. So it's the same. It's the same as in Ireland, where so many of the women came from, because genetically our DNA, the female DNA and or the DNA in women in Iceland is between 70% and 80% Irish, Scottish.
Really?
Yes. Whereas the DNA in the men are about 80% Norse, could be Norway or Denmark.
Wow.
So there's so we're much more related to the Irish. And if you go to Ireland, you know, you look around, you say, oh, he looks like somebody from home, or she's the same as my friend or something. So the resemblance is there. The connection is there. We're both island nations. And I think island nations are also, we view the world differently. And further back in time, before the Norse people settled here in Iceland, there were monks from Ireland who sailed on their tiny boats all the way up to Iceland because there was this lore about it being Isis land, being a very powerful land where they came to meditate and contemplate.
Isis as from Egypt?
Yes. Okay. Because also, even further back, some of the Egyptians sailed through the Mediterranean and settled on some of the Irish islands.
Interesting. Yeah. And then from Ireland, they came to Isis land.
Yeah, yeah. And so in the east and the north, in the east and the west, always by the coast or on small islands, were settlements of the Irish monks, which we call Papar. And there are still ruins that you can find. So they'd find, you know, stay in places where they could easily go out to fish.
Wow, yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Wow, fascinating. Let's go back to the elves or the invisible people. That's
okay.
Amazing.
Yeah.
The one place where you said that there's a place here in town where the road goes around this cluster of rocks, are the elves still living there?
It seems kind of vacated now, and it's also there's another area. It's like they do leave. I don't see any vibration going on in there. I think it's too crowded for them, and they kind of like more rural areas. But in the Borgarfjörður area, there's like a whole city. They're in them, you know, it's like in the mountain itself, but it's at the very top, and you look at it and it looks like a fortress wall around it. Here in Reykjavik, I don't see much elf activity. There is in Hafnarfjörður, which is one of the, you know, in the greater Reykjavik area, a small garden, and there are a couple of cliffs where there are dwellings, but the rocks where the traffic is going all the time, it's like they're too disturbed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, and they moved the rock from the original site, especially here on the road leading out of Reykjavik number one. They moved the rock and said they were going to move it because the elves would kind of move along, but when you take a house from its foundation, do you think anyone's going to stay in it?
Probably not.
No. So they moved the rock, but the beings didn't stay on.
The rock itself, do they live under the rock, in the rock?
In the rock.
In the rock.
Yeah. Wow. It's as if it's an opening into another world.
Wow, fascinating.
And in our folklore, it's interesting. There are always stories about the hidden people attracting men and women into the light. So there's always the light. It's a huge light. And when when they're on another frequency like this, and go watch the first, I think, or the Lord of the Rings movie. You see, in the first movie, you see the great frequency around them. What was it called? Rovendale, or I don't remember anymore. Rondale or something. So, and they were so much light around them. So you see you don't see them in a physical density. You see just the vibration and the kind of outlines of who they are.
If a spiritually very high frequency person approached or found one of these communities and talked to them, is it possible they could be invited in to join them?
That's a possibility. Usually, my experience has been that they more come out to join you.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, rather than you go in to join them. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely possible. Next time you come to Iceland, you should go to Snæfellsnes and meditate at Mount Stabafell, or you can do it from wherever you live.
Oh, I see.
And see if you can go inside.
Okay.
You'll be able to find a lot of. I've been, and I haven't been in a little while, is that I don't ask like, where are you from? When did you build this or something? It's not been that kind of an experience. It's been more like I enter and I seem to be taken through some initiation steps, mm-hmm. and as I get more initiations and listen and learn more, I'm allowed to go further and see more. Mm-hmm. And then this wise man came and he took me to the space ship. So it's just like one step after another, so mm-hmm. to speak.
Fascinating. Do the humans, they look like us, except they're just in a higher vibration?
They look quite a lot like us. Yeah. Some say they have pointed ears. I haven't really noticed exactly. I've not been focusing so much on the ears. Mm-hmm. But they do look pretty much like us.
Being in a higher vibration, do they eat food like we do, or their diets are different, or do they eat food at all?
Actually, I haven't checked as
okay.
such.
Okay, interesting.
No, I haven't asked. Yeah. But when I've been inside what we could call dwellings, it appears to be similar life as we are, because they're moving about with food, but what type of food, I haven't kind of checked.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
It appears to be at least grains and vegetables and stuff like that.
Have they told you their history of when they started or how long they've been here?
No, but you see, there is a belief. And when there is a belief and you move from one country to another, you take the belief with you. So mm-hmm. I believe that they came with the people who moved. And it's interesting in The Lord of the Rings, because the elves got tired of the people and they moved to the west. Mm-hmm. From where? Mm-hmm. Iceland is west of mainland Europe.
Mm-hmm. Right, west of Ireland.
West of Ireland too,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they moved to the west. So I tell myself they decided to move here because it was more quiet. Mm-hmm. And they possibly knew that in the future it would be more quiet, save for eruptions and earthquakes. But in terms of there's more land to be had as such. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so in our folklore, we have several stories of interactions, many times in dreams, like I told you with the farmer who lived next mm-hmm. door to us. And had this woman come to him in a dream who asked to borrow one of his cows because she couldn't feed her child. Mm-hmm. And then for several weeks afterwards, the cows would come back at the end of the day and one of them had no mm-hmm. milk in her. Mm-hmm. So then this woman came again one night and thanked him profoundly for helping her out. And the next day when the cows came back, he could milk that cow that had been...
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, empty. So the it's a lot around dreams, but in the Snæfellsnes area, there is a story, of an incident that happened not so long ago, like only early this last century. There was a known elf rock, and this farmer, he wanted to... And you respect that, or you used to respect that. There was in every area, there was something like this. And the farmer decides to build a sheep shed. Mm-hmm. with using the rock as the backable and then building it. And he's warned the night before. There's somebody who comes to him in a dream and warns him, please do not do this. You're going to be disrupting our home. And he goes ahead with his project anyway. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the exact details to tell you right now, but the house burned down, that I remember. He lost one child, and eventually he and his wife left the land or the homestead because they just didn't survive there anymore or couldn't survive there anymore.
Obviously, it's important to listen to spiritual messages like that.
Yeah, very much, very, yeah.
You know, it's so fascinating to talk to you. Tell us a little bit about the difference between elves, fairies, and leprechauns.
So if I go back to our explanation here, or our, how should we say, distinction in Iceland, is that we have what is called huldufólk, but also called alvar, or elves. That's the hidden people. That is people full size, like us humans, very similar in every structure and everything, except on a totally different frequency. That's the tallest ones, we could say. Then we have what we could call the dwarves. Mm-hmm. And then we have the fairies or elves, which are smaller. Mm-hmm. And then we have the gnomes, which are the little ones, which are just like, how should we say, like this, like a photo. 40, 40,
50,
yeah, 40, yeah, 30, 40 centimeters or something. Yeah, just a little over a foot.
I've seen the gnomes in night vision goggles before.
Yeah.
I've
yeah.
seen them before at Gillian's Ranch at East
I've
City.
I've seen some in Finland, in the forest.
Yeah. And so you talk about the like the fairies, which could be called elves. They're more like the leprechauns in Ireland, mm-hmm. although it's everybody's understanding and interpretation of the size and the shape. Mm-hmm. And then when one person starts drawing leprechauns all with green hats, they end up all being with green hats. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily true. Mm-hmm. Now, so there's this little distinction. Now, the dwarves in our Eddas, in our pagan mythology, they were you know the metal people. They were the ones who built the swords. They built the jewelry. They mm-hmm. built everything like that. They were the ones who could hammer things together, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. so they were the craftsmen, basically.
I wanted to ask you this: have there been any recorded stories of people from Iceland marrying or having a family with one of these other higher vibrational
people?
And what happens to the children? Are they higher dimension? Or?
I'm not sure I remember now, and I haven't read our folklore stories recently. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I remember. It was just considered a total loss if somebody went and married, and it would usually be the men, but also the men could come into appearing as helpers at farms and such, impersonating humans, but still being from the hidden dimension.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't remember marriages as such, but it was considered that a person had kind of lost its soul to go into the and live with the hidden people. And sometimes people disappeared and weren't found. So whether it was because the body wasn't found or whether they disappeared into some rock face that opened up for them suddenly, we don't really know.
Now, here's another question. I go to Mount Shasta twice a year.
Yeah.
Where it just contains an ancient Lemurian civilization of Hollow Earth and the city of Telos.
Yeah.
They exist in the fifth dimension. Are they related, these hidden civilizations, hidden people, are they related to the Hollow Earth?
Very, very likely. Very
okay.
likely.
That makes
yeah.
sense then.
Yeah. Because when I was in Mount Shasta back in 1994, mm-hmm. we made a rainbow bridge between Mount Shasta and the Snæfellsjökull Glacier. Mm-hmm. And we left some rocks on the mountain, and we took some rocks back to create, to kind of ground the bridge between the two, and the there is a civilization underneath the glacier, mm-hmm. also, so that's like a whole world, mm-hmm. and very likely connected, and also Saint Michael. His energy is very strong at the glacier here in Iceland.
Archangel Michael.
Yeah. So it's like there are other very highly, you know, high spiritual beings who dwell there,
right.
or kind of use the energy to promote it or send it to us or to help us or you know, support us or whatever.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
That is just fascinating listening to
yeah.
you. It's an area that I knew nothing about until just a few minutes ago.
Okay. Well, I think you're going to come back, and if you read my book, there's going to be some stories in it that you can enjoy. So you'll know more, mm-hmm. and I hope that more questions will be answered as you go through the book.
Tell us, here's a section on the mountain and the Cheops pyramid in Egypt.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, there was an English archaeologist, and his name was Adam Rutherford, mm-hmm. and he was in Egypt prior to World War II, mm-hmm. and he found a connection that he called the Iceland Connection, and it's connected to the star system Orion. Mm-hmm. So the energy line between the Iceland and the Cheops Pyramid is strongest in, I think it's November or February, something to do with the alignment of Orion.
Mm-hmm.
And they found inscriptions that he then linked through certain parts of the world all the way up to Iceland. And he wrote a book, and he was, and this was, I think, in 1948, early 1950s, that his book was published in Icelandic. And he said that a new light would shine from Iceland mm-hmm. to the rest of the world, so that we would, the reason why we had not mingled so much with other nations and stayed so much the way, you know, isolated like we were, being so well literate as we have been even through the centuries, or even through the Dark Ages, most people learned how to read and write, or learned to recite poetry and remember, you know, so there's a very strong oral tradition. So he came here, and he actually spoke to the public from the, I think it was from the balcony of our parliament or from...
Hello, friends. I'm so sorry. We ran out at the very end, but... I'll be bringing her back on next week as well to finish up her interview. And in the meantime, during the next hour, we'll be bringing on Michiko Hayashi from Tokyo, Japan, to celebrate the life and work of Dr. Masaru Emoto, who was one of the world's most famous and spiritual men, people on the planet. And then during the second part of our next hour, we'll be talking about a wonderful new film that Conrad Halbig of Koha Publishing in Munich, Germany, has made to celebrate the life and work of Dr. Emoto. And with that, if we could play the water song now, that would be great. A nice lead-in to wrap up this this segment on Iceland. I hope you can come with me to Iceland. I'll be going there next year in June to meet the elves and the people of the Hollow Earth. Anyway, my friends, please stay tuned for our next hour.